It turned out that Leiter was from Texas. While he talked on about his job with the Joint Intelligence Staff of NATO and the difficulty of maintaining security in an organization where so many nationalities were represented, Bond reflected that good Americans were fine people and that most of them seemed to come from Texas. Felix Leiter was about 35. He was tall, with a thin, bony frame, and his lightweight, tan-coloured suit hung loosely from his shoulders like the clothes of Frank Sinatra. His movements and speech were slow, but one had the feeling that there was plenty of speed and strength in him, and that he would be a tough and cruel fighter. As he sat hunched over the table, he seemed to have some of the jackknife quality of a falcon. There was this impression also in his face, in the sharpness of his chin and cheekbones, and the wide, wry mouth. His grey eyes had a feline slant which was increased by his habit of screwing them up against the smoke of the Chesterfields, which he tapped out of the pack in a chain. The permanent wrinkles which this habit had etched at the corners gave the impression that he smiled more with his eyes than with his mouth. A mop of straw-coloured hair lent his face a boyish look, which closer examination contradicted. Although he seemed to talk quite openly about his duties in Paris, Bond soon noticed that he never spoke of his American colleagues in Europe or in Washington, and he guessed that Leiter held the interests of his own organization far above the mutual concerns of the North Atlantic allies. Bond sympathized with him. By the time Leiter had swallowed another whiskey, and Bond had told him about the Muntzes and his short reconnaissance trip down the coast that morning, it was 7:30. And they decided to stroll over to their hotel together. Before leaving the casino, Bond deposited his total capital of $24 million at the case, keeping only a few notes of 10 mille as pocket money. As they walked across to the Splendide, they saw that a team of workmen was already busy at the scene of the explosion. Several trees were uprooted, and hoses from 3 municipal tank cars were washing down the boulevard and pavements. The bomb crater had disappeared, and only a few passers-by had paused to gape. Bond assumed that similar facelifting had already been carried out at the Hermitage, and to the shops and frontages which had lost their windows. In the warm blue dusk, Royal Les Eaux was once again orderly and peaceful.
"Who's the concierge working for?"
asked Leiter as they approached the hotel. Bond was not sure and said so. Mathis had been unable to enlighten him.
"Unless you have bought him yourself," he had said, "you must assume that he has been bought by the other side. All concierges are venal. It is not their fault. They are trained to regard all hotel guests, except Maharajas, as potential cheats and thieves. They have as much concern for your comfort or well-being as crocodiles."
Bond remembered Mathis's pronouncement when the concierge hurried up to inquire whether he had recovered from his most unfortunate experience of the afternoon. Bond thought it well to say that he still felt a little shaky. He hoped that if the intelligence were relayed, Le Chiffre would at any rate start playing that evening with a basic misinterpretation of his adversary's strength. The concierge proffered glycerin hopes for Bond's recovery. Leiter's room was on one of the upper floors, and they parted company at the lift after arranging to see each other at the casino at around 10:30 or 11, the usual hour for the high tables to begin play.
This book is continued on Disc 2.